Welcome to Trial Card Talk, news and information on the biopharma and life science industry and the role that Trial Card plays in it. Here's your host, Landy Townsend.
Welcome to the July episode of Trial Card Talk, the official monthly podcast series brought to you by Trial Card Incorporated. Trial Card is a full-service life sciences commercialization company that provides comprehensive solutions that span the entire biopharmaceutical value chain, in addition to a foundation of fully integrated, digitally enabled patient support services. Its broader offerings include everything from late-stage clinical trial management to post-marketing HCP engagement services and proprietary data-as-a-service payer intelligence and insights. Founded in 2000, Trial Card provides commercialization needs for more than 400 life science customers and has connected over 36 million patients with more than $22 billion in branded drug savings to date. The company is headquartered in Morrisville, North Carolina. For more information about Trial Card, please visit us at trialcard.com. I am Landy Townsend, the VP of Marketing and Communications here at Trial Card. And as usual, I'm with Eric Manning, Trial Card's Creative Director. Eric, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just going to say Bud Light, because they need the publicity. Bless their hearts.
It is mid-July, and we are in the middle of the summer heat, the vacation schedule,
oh boy,
and everything
howdy.
Else. But life goes on at Trial Card. Eric, any trips or anybody in your family been traveling lately?
Yeah. The wife is heading with her mother to L.A. for a week. Well, Long Beach. And my mother just left this morning for Miami.
Yeah.
So
you're batching it, huh?
Party at my house.
Party at your house. Yeah. You know, we talk often about mobile phones and technology and how we're so tied to our phones and how, you know, the technology in many cases has made life easier. And we were talking this morning about, I'm going to share a story here quickly. My wife and I were in Cincinnati this weekend and went to a baseball game. Those people that know me will find that hard to believe that I went to a baseball game. But she's type 1 diabetic, and she has a continuous glucose monitoring system that is tied to her phone. Unfortunately, she left her phone at Great American Ballpark, and we got back to the hotel. We had somewhere to be that night. No phone. And so their panic ensued. So I ran back down to the ballpark, found the phone that had already been turned in by some nice person, and everything worked out great. But it hit me that because, you know, she is so reliant on her phone, that losing a phone for somebody with diabetes or somebody else whose health is tied to an app or a system can be quite catastrophic. And so all these thoughts were going through our mind about the steps we would need to take if that phone wasn't found. But thankfully for us, it was. But anyway.
All's well that ends well.
All's well that ends well.
You know, it's a matter of time before you don't have to keep up with a phone because it'll be like embedded in you or something. You
know? Well, look at all the advancements. I mean, just in the last 10 years and how things are so much easier and how things have been streamlined. You know, you don't have to prick your finger anymore to check your blood sugar several times a day. It's all done for you. So, hopefully things will continue to evolve and it'll be easier for people that are afflicted with these types of diseases.
And the remake of Total Recall, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 years ago, the protagonist, I'm trying to remember the actor's name. Anyway, his phone was a grid system built into his hand. And if he wanted to video, he would just go up to any glass surface with, you know, made out of silica or something, put his hand up against it, and it would automatically show an image of who he's talking to. Eventually, that's going to happen.
Yeah,
and if he wanted to remove the tracking and the phone and everything from, he had to cut open his hand and pull out this wire mesh system and stuff. Yeah. So, but anyway, that's coming. That eventually we're all going to be born with some chip in us that tracks us and Oh, Lord, am I going down that rabbit hole?
When you said Total Recall, I watched Total Recall at a drive-in movie theater.
Oh, the original with
in
Schwarzenegger.
In Rockport, Indiana, many years ago. Goodness gracious. So those of you that know Trial Card and have followed us for the past few years know about our slew of acquisitions and how we have added these companies to the Trial Card family. We have two guests today. One that is with Triangle Insights Group, which is a acquisition that we made in April of 2022, and another that works for Policy Reporter, another company that that we purchased in recent years, but adds to the synergy, overall synergy of the Trial Card team. So we're pleased to have these two individuals with us today. And without further ado, let's get right to it. Our guests today are two colleagues that some of you may be familiar with, Megan Thomas and Jason Zemzig. Megan and Jason, welcome to Trial Card Talk. Would you please introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name is Megan Thomas. I'm a partner with Triangle Insights Group. I lead our pricing and market access area of focus at the firm, and we're currently doing a lot of work on the Inflation Reduction Act. So, pleasure to be here today.
Thanks, Landy. I'm Jason Zemsik. I'm principal consultant with our Insights and Data Group from Policy Reporter. Previously spent 10 years with Trial Card in patient services. Currently work with our pharmaceutical manufacturer clients on market access consulting and advisory services, helping them understand the industry landscape and factors that are impacting their strategy. And also very happy to be here today.
Fantastic. We have two of our very best, so this should be a great episode. As Megan mentioned, we will talk Inflation Reduction Act today. The drug provisions in the IRA Act of 2022 are of critical importance to pharmaceutical manufacturers who now have a host of new considerations when thinking through their portfolio strategy, as well as pricing and market access considerations. So first question for our panelists, big picture, what are the key areas of the Inflation Reduction Act that pharma manufacturers need to be following?
Sure. So there's six or seven different drug provisions within the legislation that was passed last year. There are three that manufacturers are really focused on across the board. The first is drug negotiation. So this means that within the Inflation Reduction Act, for the first time within the Medicare channel, there will be negotiated drug prices. So in practice, that's a form of price control, and that will be implemented for about 50 Part B and 50 Part D drugs that ultimately have the highest Medicare spend. So think chronic drugs or high specialty cost drugs. There's also Part D redesign, which changes the benefit structure for Part D beneficiaries. It removes the coverage gap, which will be great for patients by 2025, and it revises the liability for both plans as well as manufacturers, which means clients of Trial Card will be paying more in the form of rebates overall and have lower net prices given the Part D redesign. Additionally, there's inflationary penalties, which everyone's focused on. So this will mean that if manufacturers raise their annual price increases over CPI-U index, that they'll have to provide rebates back for those price increases year over year. So this is similar to what happens in Medicaid today.
Yeah, really, Megan did a great job of summarizing the key points that manufacturers need to be concerned with around the IRA. And I think some of the really challenging implications that we're going to see with negotiation, one thing that stands out is this is somewhat of a moving target. There's a very, very complicated formula. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services released guidance on how exactly negotiation-eligible drugs are going to be identified. And it's somewhat of a moving target in the sense that we're going to see the first cut of this list, the negotiation-eligible drug list, coming out soon, September of this year. But it's based on price and market calculations that are over a rolling period of time. And so from a manufacturer standpoint, it's going to require them to really maintain current on all of their data, all of their pricing data, and try to understand, do you have a product that's going to be targeted for negotiation? You may think that you are going to avoid that when, in fact, you will be on the negotiation eligible list. When it comes to Part D redesign, I think the big thing here we're really going to see is increased likelihood or need for cross-subsidization as this spills over into the commercial market. You know, obviously the combination of increased liability for Part D plans and the addition of liability for manufacturers combined with lower threshold for catastrophic coverage will kick in, that dollar amount, that has to be made up somewhere. And so I think that's something that we're that manufacturers really need to keep an eye on. And then finally, with inflationary penalties, if you want to look at it this way, one potential silver lining is that with inflation currently high as it is, some products may not be affected as much immediately. However, as that changes, as that shifts, as inflation goes back and declines and goes back to more normal levels, really having to understand where you fall on potential exposure to inflationary penalties relative to the baseline inflation level calculation. So a number of things that just really need to require currency and upkeep on the manufacturer's part.
Jason, you mentioned the introduction of inflationary penalties for Part D and Part B and how that will force manufacturers to optimize launch prices in order to avoid long-term net price erosion in the Medicare channel. Megan, talk a little bit more about that for us, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So with the inflationary penalties, ultimately, let's say, as Jason mentioned, while inflation's high right now, this really may not impact manufacturers very much. So if inflation is 8-9% and your annual price increase is 2-3% on your list price of your drug, you wouldn't be subject to any of these rebates. But as inflation stabilizes, hopefully in the U.S., if manufacturers are not cognizant of these inflationary penalties, they would ultimately owe a rebate back to Medicare for the delta between what the level of inflation is and the level of increase that they've had year over year for their drugs. And so ultimately, what this is likely to lead to for new drugs that are launching is manufacturers will need to be very cognizant of the launch price of their drug because they won't have as much flexibility over the life cycle of that drug to increase the price year over year.
Anything to add, Jason?
Yeah, I think as we, again, looking forward, where this really comes into play for manufacturers and things they need to consider, is developing that strong value story for payers. You know, if you are having to set a launch price that has to potentially account for not being able to have that price erosion or price increase over several years, you really have to be sound in articulating the value of your product and what is the unmet need in the market, why does it warrant coverage, and why is your price justified. And we've seen a few manufacturers over the past few years do a really good job of this, come out with papers, with letters that go into very, very much amount of detail describing here's how we arrived at the price that we're launching at. And I think we're going to potentially see a lot more of that, the need for a lot more of that to really be able to convey the value of the product. The other thing that is going to become extremely important, and it is already, but it's only going to highlight or continue to emphasize that, is understanding your payer mix. So what portion of your patient population is covered by Medicare, by Medicaid? What portion of your patient population are commercial patients? So that you can accurately forecast, what is the scale of impact going to be for this? And these are things within our Policy Reporter business and specifically our insights and data team that we do a lot of work around this for manufacturers. One particular example is predictive coverage analysis, where we will predict the type of what you would expect your coverage to be for a product based on benchmarking against analog products so that when you launch, you have an idea of what to expect. So as part of market access strategy planning, this is going to become increasingly more important.
That's great. Let's go back to some of the implications and the key changes within the IRA, things like Part D redesign, inflationary penalties, negotiation. Megan, what do our clients need to know about that?
So some of these components are really changing how manufacturers are starting to think about their portfolio. So some manufacturers, for example, Eli Lilly has withdrawn certain molecules because of the Inflation Reduction Act considerations. Other acquisitions have happened to acquire high-cost specialty drugs because of the Inflation Reduction Act. So manufacturers are really starting to think through their portfolio mix. And a specific example of that would be with respect to negotiation. There are a lot of nuances in terms of what makes you eligible for negotiation outside of just spend. So, for example, biologics have a longer time horizon from launch until they would be eligible for negotiation. So we've seen some manufacturers start to deprioritize small molecule programs within their portfolios because of the IRA and the negotiation components, where they would have essentially more bandwidth on a biologic drug before they were eligible. The same would apply with orphan drugs. So if you only have one indication and that's an orphan indication, you wouldn't be eligible for negotiation under the IRA drug provisions. And so we see some manufacturers really tilting their portfolio towards orphan drugs or potentially suspending additional indications following their first launch in an orphan indication to avoid the potential for negotiation at the end of the life cycle of the product.
Great. Jason, anything to add there?
Just that I think you're really going to hear from patient groups on this. You know, one of the unintended consequences of this is, as exactly as Megan mentioned, manufacturers having to be more thoughtful in what indications they pursue, the order of indications where they launch versus what may be down the road. And then also, from the manufacturer's point of view, seeing it as being, in a sense, disincentivized to really pursue other indications. And there have been some pharmaceutical manufacturer CEOs that have come out with some pretty strong statements around how the IRA is going to affect this. And so tying it back to the patient point of view, I think you're going to see a lot of advocacy patient groups come out with really strong opinions on this because it is going to potentially restrict availability of products for a number of disease states.
Any other reactions from manufacturers that would change the course of the IRA?
Absolutely. So manufacturers are reacting really strongly to the IRA. We even see, in addition to some of the portfolio considerations that Jason and I were discussing, how manufacturers are revising what they are pursuing within their portfolio and what they're bringing to market for patients. We also see manufacturers that are suing because of the IRA. So Merck was the first to come out with a lawsuit here, followed by BMS, as well as other industry groups like Pharma, the Chamber of Commerce. These groups are really pushing back to state that the IRA is violating the First and Fifth Amendments by forcing companies to give discounts without the option of walking away from the Medicare channel. So it's still to be seen how these will play out within the court systems and if any components of the IRA will be rolled back. But even in response to these initial lawsuits, we've seen that CMS has come out with some revisions to how they're thinking through the negotiation components to try to mitigate some of the impact from these lawsuits.
Yeah, the big question I see whenever you introduce the element of legal challenge is always what effect is that going to have on the timeline? As we know, legal proceedings aren't quick. And as we saw recently with another area where, for example, pharma specifically got involved and brought legal action against CMS last year in an area that we at Trial Card followed very closely around the final rule on best price and manufacturer coupons, it left manufacturers in sort of this state of limbo because you have to essentially plan for the provisions as they are and as they're scheduled to go into effect, while also knowing that the legal process is going to work its course and there are going to be a series of events there that could potentially alter it. So from a strategy planning standpoint, it just makes it even more complicated for manufacturers and having to have essentially plans in both directions, depending on what the outcome of that legal action could be. I think specific to the challenges being brought, you know, none of us are lawyers. There's some opinions out there around some, you know, may have a greater likelihood of success than others. If it's any indication, you know, there is precedent where, again, going back to that pharma lawsuit against CMS last year that was successful. So that's not entirely out of the question. But again, it just is a big unknown at this point that we have to plan for.
And to Jason's point, we even see manufacturers that are building two different business cases for products within their pipeline so that they can communicate what the impact would be with and without different tenants within the IRA. So manufacturers are kind of planning for two different paths and runways right now and making sure they have all their bases covered.
Yeah, as we think about how the IRA impacts our clients, our life science clients, what product types are most likely to be impacted by this?
Yeah, so we've been doing a lot of work on this topic at Triangle Insights Group, and we really think about the IRA impacting different product archetypes or portfolios very differently. So dependent upon the makeup within a manufacturer's portfolio, you're going to see them worried about different components of the IRA. So for example, if you think about a specialty Part D therapeutic with a very high price point, so think Part D oral oncology drugs, that's ultimately going to result in significantly increased liability for manufacturers under that Part D redesign. So those manufacturers will have both consistent liability in the initial and catastrophic phases. And so additionally, if that space is competitive, payers who now have more liability are going to try to shift that over to the manufacturers. So ultimately, the manufacturers are going to ultimately have a lower net price on those products because of the Part D redesign. So this is an area that they're really paying attention to for this type of archetype of product, if you will. We see other manufacturers paying attention to different components. So if you continue with our oncology example and you think about an infused Part B therapeutic that's also higher cost, that same liability isn't going to apply under Part D redesign. So those manufacturers are really thinking more about how to price appropriately at launch, likely a higher price point in order to minimize those annual price increases and therefore the impact of the inflationary penalties. So it really depends on that product mix, the therapeutic category, et cetera, within there for which components of the IRA are most likely to be impactful and to have a real financial impact on the manufacturer.
Jason, anything to add?
I'll just add that obviously understanding the product archetype and how different products are impacted is the critical factor here. But on top of that, again, for me, it just comes back to also having a really good, solid understanding of your payer mix as well. Because when you think in terms of scale of impact, that's where it really comes into play. So being able to understand what segment of your patient population falls into each coverage type is extremely critical.
Yeah. Let's talk specifically about the Medicare channel. What are, if any, are the downstream implications with Medicare?
Do you want to start, Jason?
Sure. Yeah. So I think the big thing that I would think of is utilization management. Plans are going to take on significantly increased liability. And as I mentioned earlier, anytime you have that difference, that has to be made up somewhere. So we see it all the time, every year, you know, formulary exclusions come out, step edits, those types of things. I think you're going to see even more intense scrutiny around utilization management. And as from the payer standpoint, as they describe tools that they put in place to ensure appropriate use and appropriate access. But it goes without saying that there's going to be a significant amount of analysis done on the payer side to really understand what their exposure is, what their liability is. And we're likely to see adjustments accordingly. So that would be the biggest thing that I could think of.
And in some cases, it will even give the plans additional tools to negotiate. So take, for example, a product that is being negotiated and you have a competitor in the same class that's not being negotiated. Because the plan is able to get kind of a negotiated rate on the competitive product, they then have more leverage at the table with the competitor product to say, we also want some rebates here on your product, even if you're not on the negotiation list. So it's an additional kind of tool in the payer toolkit to try to spread that liability a bit.
Yeah, that opens up a whole new can of possibilities, right? How about downstream implications on channels outside of Medicare? Let's cover that really quick.
Yeah, absolutely. So given what Jason mentioned around the plans having significantly increased liability in the Medicare channel, we're pretty confident payers are going to try to shift some of that into other areas and books of business. So, you know, the plans are likely to also look for compensation in other channels like commercial. So deepening rebates from manufacturers because of the increased liability that they're taking on. Additionally, we expect that patients are going to be increasingly shifted from the commercial channel into free goods and PAP programs as payers are trying to carve out coverage as their cost burden becomes higher.
specific to patient services, how do we envision the secondary impacts of the IRA playing out for patient programs?
Well, one thing that is top of mind that Megan just alluded to is this trend that we've already seen over the last few years towards specialty carve-outs, and I think it will only increase for those obvious reasons. You know, there's obviously going to be cost shifting. There's going to be a need to make up some of that difference. And so when manufacturers are planning their patient services strategies, the fact that this issue is already garnering a ton of attention within the patient services world, and we deal with it for our trial card clients, nearly every client that we're running patient support programs for, I think continuing to plan but go a level deeper and really put analysis into to what extent is this affecting us, what type of controls can we put in place, whether it's increased in eligibility criteria or doing more frequent enrollment or verifications of eligibility for these programs, something to try to address the fact that we are going to see a lot more patients carved out, specialty carve outs, and patients being referred over to free goods programs. The other thing that I would think of for manufacturers is, again, and I mentioned this going back to, we talked earlier about the potential impact of the best price, the proposed final rule on best price that ultimately didn't come to fruition. And thinking, you know, this doesn't directly affect the commercial market, but it truly does, in the sense that the spillover effect portfolio-wide for manufacturers, it's going to necessitate a lot of cross-functional work and analysis and planning within organizations that may not already have a need to take place. You know, one of the things that we see is if you're in patient services, you're working with commercial patients, you know, you may not have a need to get involved with some of the things that affect Medicare, Medicaid, but it's going to really show that from a strategy planning standpoint, from an analysis standpoint, looking at financials, everything is truly impacted and intertwined. And so having those communication channels within the organization on working with different groups, different functional areas as part of your strategy planning, and as Megan mentioned earlier, having different scenarios based on if X happens, then this is our course of action. I think that's going to be really key in the years ahead for patient services.
I agree with Jason. It becomes increasingly important under the context of the IRA to understand across an organization your holistic cost of access. So not just by channel, not just by therapeutic area, but across your entire portfolio, your entire all of your books of business, for example. You need to understand how things like patient services and your pricing and contract teams, which are often siloed, how those start to intertwine to impact the cost of access, and ultimately for patients, how you can still enable access under the context of the IRA.
Megan, that's a really great point. In fact, actually, I remember you all at Triangle Insights Group working on, was it a cost of access model for a few clients? And that really takes into account all of those different things, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So the cost of access modeling is a service we provide in order to look across those silos. So pulling in from the patient services perspective across books of business, even down to the plan level, to start to understand what are the trade-offs that an organization is making, and ultimately what is their cost of access across their business and across their portfolio.
Jason, as we start to close, what are some other issues that are affecting drug pricing right now?
So a big one that I look at right now is also the government scrutiny of PBM practices. So when we think of the IRA, obviously that's largely affecting pharmaceutical manufacturers. But the other side is that the government has taken an interest in PBMs. And there's a number of market responses. We've seen some PBMs come out with additional services offerings to try to show that they are moving in the direction that the government is desiring there. So again, that's a unknown how that will ultimately play out. Some of the actions and transparency efforts to show transparency on the part of PBMs will be sufficient for the government, or if they will probe deeper into that. And then the other thing that I always look at whenever I think about healthcare policy and costs in general is the fact that we are heading into another election cycle. And so as we ramp up the campaign season, I think you're going to see all of these factors kind of come together under the umbrella of healthcare. So that's always a critical issue in any election, and I wouldn't expect any differently as we head into 2024.
So as we close today, and I want to thank our guests as well, Megan and Jason. It's been great having you in the studio. But Megan, recently you've done a position paper on this topic, and I wanted to give you a moment to talk about that and to also tell our listeners where they might be able to find that piece.
Absolutely. So we recently wrote a paper at Triangle Insights Group focused on the Inflation Reduction Act and why all manufacturers should really be thinking about this and evaluating their portfolios to understand based on the therapeutic areas, the conditions and the channels, how this might impact their overall business, and really encouraging manufacturers to take a more fully integrated and comprehensive market access strategy. So again, breaking down those silos to really understand that cost of access. So we would love for you all to download the paper at triangleinsightsgroup.com under our Insights tab, or reach out to us at contactus@triangleinsights.com for more information.
That will just about do it for this episode of Trial Card Talk. Again, I want to thank Megan and Jason for joining us here in the studio. Please come back anytime, guys. And as I mentioned once before, if you heard something today that piques your curiosity and you want to hear more, please check out our entire library of episodes on your favorite podcast platform. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, rate, and review us. And if you'd like to know more information about any of our many services, please send us an email at sales@trialcard.com or contact us at triangleinsightsgroup.com. Until then, stay safe and be well, and we will see you next month. The Trial Card Talk podcast is a production of Trial Card Incorporated, edited and produced by Trial Card Creative Director Eric Manning. Trial Card Talk and its contents are the property of Trial Card Incorporated, Mooresville, North Carolina, USA.